She's a depressed 20-something with a college degree who copes with life by smoking too much weed, dodging cochinos as she rolls down the street.
Oye, mami, I wanna be your dog.
Aim higher, pendejo.
She's la marihuanera, as seen on IG.
That's me.
Marihuanera.
Yes. Also, I don't know if you're going to smoke right now, but I got started on it. Yes. Love it. You got your vape. You got your pen.
I can't smoke inside. I have the paranoia of like not getting my deposit back.
That's very legitimate. That's very real. Is your landlord like chill, like nice, like cool, or are they like sticklers?
We've been here a month. Like we just moved. But like, the last spot we were at, they seemed a little weird about it. Yeah. So, like, I was just like, let's just vape inside. I might even switch to dabs. That's not a good excuse to switch to dabs, but just become a monster.
You're like, I'm just trying to be a responsible tenant. I have to dab.
So I got to freebase this weed real quick.
No. Because I respect my landlord.
It's like, I would be very irritated if we are respectful to a place and we don't get our money back. I was like, give me my money back. That's what I've become an old man about that. I don't know.
No, as you should. Absolutely. That is nothing to play with. Are you liking the new place? Are you like settling in? Are you all unpacked?
We're 3/4 unpacked. But yeah, I'm liking it. It's different. It's new. It's a lot more space because we lived in a studio in Hollywood, me and my wife and our dog and our cat. It was small. It was like 400 square feet. It was we saw each other a lot. I guess this is where I found out I like my wife because we live such a small space.
Yeah, I mean, it's that's very intimate. That's very cozy.
Yeah, it was sucked at times cooking on a hot plate and living out of mini fridges. But now it's like we got a one bedroom with like a normal stove and like a normal fridge. You like really start to, I appreciated a toaster this morning. I was like, yeah, this is sick. I could toast bread.
The finer things, the luxuries.
Yeah.
You don't realize these little human inventions like make a huge difference. Like the toaster like really elevated a lot of things.
But we don't really give a shit about it because we got this iPhone. Oh, nah, man, this thing toasts my bread in the morning.
Yeah.
That's like a pothead love.
Yes. I mean, like, I like thinking about it now, like if we had to toast our own bread just over an open flame, like it would be hard.
Are you scared of fire?
Am I scared? You know, the house across, I woke up one day, like all these sirens, a lot of like fire hydrants, like coming towards my neighborhood. It woke me up like at 5 a.m. and I go outside my door and the house across the street is engulfed in flames, like actively on fire, you know? So the trucks are showing up, they're putting the fire out. Me and my grandma are sitting on the front porch drinking our coffee and we sat there and watched the fire be extinguished. We were there all day. We were outside for 8 hours watching the firefighters work. And then I cut them up a plate of mixed fruit and I like took it out to them.
You're not scared of fire. That's what that means.
The moral of the story is I'm not scared of fire. No.
And you like cheese man is what it is. It's like two.
I like firefighters. I like men with jobs.
Specifically those types of men with jobs. You don't like all men with jobs.
Not all men with jobs. I like men with jobs where the job, like, he's going to be out of the house 4 nights a week because he's sleeping in the station. I like that. You know, the job takes him away from the home. That is ideal.
You need your own space.
Oh, absolutely. As you see, right? Like now you have more space. So like, do you have more of your own space now?
Yeah, I do. And I do. And I appreciate a lot of it. But it's like, I guess just being a comic, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the intimacy because I know that I'll be on the road soon and I'll be like away from all that. So I guess I'm a sucker for that. Like I kind of miss the old place a little bit, but no, I do enjoy my space, my independence. Yeah.
And so I wanted to ask you, because I ask all of my guests, especially the comics that come on the show. So as a pothead and as a comedian, what came first for you, the comedy or the cannabis?
Oh, man, the comedy. I'm late starting. Like, I was a drinker. I was like a heavy drinker to like about 28, 30, something like that. I started smoking when I was 28. So I'm 38 now. So I've been smoking for 10 years. It actually might be my this 10 years of smoking weed and not really drinking as much. So the comedy, I started when I was 25. I started smoking weed heavily, like every day. I don't know what flipped it, but it was just like, I'm just try this. And then I was like, oh, I really like this a lot. Like more than alcohol, because there's no hangover for me.
Yeah.
The hangover was so intense with alcohol that I just couldn't take it. But a nice groggy weed hangover, you're just kind of sleepy. You kind of, just coffee will take you out of it. You take a shower, you're done. Mm-hmm. But an alcoholic hangover, I'm like 30. No, there's no way I can recover from that.
Yeah. And they can last like 2 days.
Yeah. As you age, they can last a whole week. Like, yeah. But you should stop doing that. But weed, I'll take 100, 200 milligram edible before bed. I'll still be high the next day, but like regular high. I'll be too high, so it'll go into my sleep. So I'll be dead, and then I'll wake up and I'm like, oh, I'm kind of high, but it's nice, you know. And I don't experience that with alcohol. You don't go to bed drunk and you wake up nice drunk. You wake up like, I want to die.
The alcohol, it doesn't get better as the hours go on. It gets worse and worse and worse.
100%. Yeah. So weed, definitely weed was 10 years of smoking weed every day.
Very nice. And so did you go straight to flower? Were you smoking pre-rolls, blunts? Did you try vapes at the beginning? Like, what did you do first?
I was on the road in Oregon. So and that's where I found bulk marijuana. You could buy a shit ton of marijuana for like very cheap. So I would just go through very low THC, I'd say 15%, 16%, and chain smoke that like cigarettes. So it'd be flower, but it'd be like how a detective, like, you know, stress. So I would stress smoke cigarettes, but very low THC. I kind of miss those days because now I go through a vape pen in like 3 days, two days sometimes, because I just doesn't do it as much anymore. But flower, I want to start doing dabs soon. Just stop fucking around.
Do you have like a rig, like a dab rig? You're going to invest in one.
I don't know. I don't got nothing. I just got my little vape pens and my flower that I smoke outdoors like an idiot because it's raining. I want to smoke it inside so bad. I'm outside with the other people who are smoking cigarettes. I'm just smoking my weed. They're like, hey, why am I out here with you? This is stupid.
But yeah. Whatever. Outdoors is for cigarette smokers. Indoors is for weed smokers.
It is the thing though. People go, well, can I smoke in here? They go like weed or cigarettes, and you go weed, and they go, oh, okay, yeah, you're fine. No cigarettes. Cigarettes are getting the curtains. We don't want that.
Yeah, the weed doesn't stick.
It doesn't. It's kind of a nice smell. I enjoy the smell of cannabis.
I love it.
Yeah, when somebody walks by, and then somebody will, I like automatically go, oh, like, oh, somebody's having a party. I'll go, you smell. I'll tell people they smell nice, just weird. Just freak a pothead out. Like, you smell nice.
I love that. That's my favorite thing. I always have weed on me, and I usually have like a half smoked joint. So I smell smoky, like I'm aromatic, you know, like, and men in particular will say exactly that. Like, you smell great. And I know what they're talking about. And I never offer to smoke them out.
It's the opposite.
It should be the opposite. Women out.
Yeah. I know. It's like buying a girl a drink.
Yes,
that's my version of buying a girl a drink. Would you like to smoke weed? It's worked.
It should be the opposite, but what I have found is like men are very broke. They're poor, so sometimes I want to smoke more or drink more, and I'm like, look, I'll smoke you out because I'm trying to smoke. You know.
You hang out with some broke ass dudes.
I mean, I love like a creative person. I love artists. So yeah.
Okay.
A lot of them are destitute. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
Especially like when they're just starting or they're at the 5-year point, like there's no money coming in. You got a day job you hate. So like, yeah, I could see like you're smoking the butts off of the joints you find. Like, sure. Please help
you
me.
Know, and I appreciate it. I look, no disrespect, Saul. Like I appreciate a good mid guy. You know, there's guys who are mid and they like to smoke mid, you know, and like, I respect that. I appreciate it. But I like my weed to come from like a place that looks like an Apple store, you know, like I like my weed to come in a glass jar. Like, that's what
God
I like.
Damn. You're a cannabis princess.
I am.
Okay. So what do you spend on weed? Like, that's my question.
I'm embarrassed to say. I'm embarrassed to say. But what I will say this. At my local dispensary, one of the bud tenders, because, you know, they have their reward system. So you get points and then you rack up a couple bucks and they take it off of your next purchase. So this one bud tender, he like is ringing me up and looks at my account and he goes, "Whoa, you got quite the balance here." He's like, "You're a big spender. You got quite the habit." I'm like, "Oh my God, really?" Nothing. He could have just shut his fucking mouth and rang me up and given me my stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Called you ma'am and said thank you. No need to shame you.
Like, whoa. I'm like, are you flirting with me right now? Like, what is this?
He says you have a problem, is what he's saying. He's like, lady.
I it's hard to say because I'm like, is he impressed? Was he impressed?
He might have been impressed.
You know? Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, how often are you going to that dispensary? Are you like Norm from Cheers there? Are you like, hey,
I was just there not 15 minutes before this interview. I was just over there. I like to stop by. I like to pay my respects. I like to say hello.
So, okay. So like, we'll reverse. Like, mine is more of along the lines of like, I could buy that, the job, the one, the beautiful one, right?
Oh, okay.
I will smoke that. I don't want, and then I'll just be too high with the way I smoke. So I don't smoke like that anymore because of apartment life, but I used to live on a farm. It'd just be joint after joint after joint. I can't smoke that high THC diamond encrusted. Like, I can't smoke those over and over and over. I'll be dumb as hell. They'd be stupid. So it's more like drinking Bud Lights. So literally Bud Light. You know what I mean? So I can do more volume. But it is nice to treat myself to things that, like, to your weed. It's very like, what's your favorite strain of weed?
Honestly, I like don't really subscribe to all of that. Like, I smoke everything, and I don't like doing like name brand. I can't do it, and this and that and this one and that one and this one and this one and this, and I can't do it. I don't know. I just, what is the highest THC content? Give it to me. Let me, what's your deal? What's your 2-for-1 today? What's new in the store? You know, what do you recommend? What haven't I tried? You know, that's how I am. I like, I'm not super particular.
How many Gucci bags do you own, Ma?
I don't own any Gucci bags. I like don't own name brand stuff unless it's from like the thrift. You know, I'm pretty low key.
I appreciate that you just, it's just your cannabis.
It's just weed. You know, I'm just like, give it to me. It's from the ground. I'll listen to you guys talk. I'll listen to the description. Hold on. My grandma's like banging on my window. Give me one second.
You're good.
1 second.
And like every good pothead show, her grandma's banging on her window. Mija! Oh, the door open. Her house is haunted. Oh, my God. That'd be so funny if Mala came back. She's all getting murdered. It wouldn't be funny, but it'd be like, oh, shit, what happened? Fuck, she's going to come back and see this tape. She would say, it'd be funny if I died.
So, okay, so speaking of keeping it low-key, right? Like, so I live in with my grandma, but I live above her garage. So she built like these little, like two little apartments above her garage. So I like rent one of them from her. So it's super chill.
You're lucky to have your grandma.
Oh yeah, no, it's great. I have both of my grandparents here. They're both down there with the dogs right now. Like, my grandpa's like usually sawing something, and then grandma's like, you know, doing whatever she's doing. It's cool.
No, I've been saying that's you. You lucky. I love my grandma a lot. My grandma is great. My grandma was great, and you're lucky to have her. She sounded adorable, to be honest with you.
She is. She's very, very cute and small. Very tiny. They get little.
Yeah, their bones start to deteriorate. That's what happens. But that's a lot of races, like Mexicans and like Asians, like they'll live to see that long to where they get little. It's like he used to be normal size. Now they just start to shrink. Yeah. It's like,
exactly.
Yeah, that's what my grandma was too. No, my grandma passed. She was 92.
Wow.
And she'd never been 110 pounds.
Little.
Very little. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandma ruled. She owned a bakery. Like she's like where I get all my sass from, I think.
Is this and so you grew up on a farm? Did you grow up in Texas?
No, I didn't grow up in Texas. It's the mullet. People always think.
Okay.
No, I'm from Stockton, California.
Which honestly makes even more sense, actually.
Yeah. Talk like a Diaz brother.
I think my dad is from Bakersfield.
Okay, so your dad is, yeah, he recognizes the agricultural aspect and yeah, all as soon that. As it starts to, yeah. I grew up in the city, but my father was an immigrant, my entire family immigrants, so they all picked fruit. They all picked vegetables. They all worked in the field. So they would always come home with like if it's cherry season, we're getting two giant buckets of cherries. Or if it's asparagus season, we're eating asparagus. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But my grandmother, that was on my dad's side. But my grandmother, she owned the Mexican bakery in Stockton. Like when bakeries were a thing, it was like they called it the little pink store, but it was La Victoria.
Ooh. And,
yeah, it was great. My grandma ruled.
So did you live with your grandma? Like, did you grow up? So you were all together in one house?
Yeah, it was like when I have a lot of childhood memories of living in my grandmother's house with my dad, my mom, my brother, and two chihuahuas. The shit was sick.
Yes. Did the chihuahuas live for forever, for a super long time?
Had to have been like 13, 14. Like, I think one of them got stolen, but they lived for, yeah. Like someone like just, there was a lot of homeless people, a lot of crackheads where we were at. So they would steal random shit. And we pretty sure one of them took the chihuahua.
It's wild. People in my neighborhood here in LA, this is a thing. They like people will just go around and just take dogs out of the yard.
Yeah, you're really just gambling at that point. This could be worth something. You know what I mean? Or
yeah.
Some sort of cartel kidnapping situation. Like, you want your dog back? Give me $5. Something weird.
Yeah. They like, sometimes I feel like people do that on purpose because then people put up their rewards posters. And I think the dog nappers are just, I think they're setting up a reward system for themselves. And then they return the dog and then they get I feel like that's what they're doing because it happens way too often. There's always missing Chueca family.
Very Mexican name.
Yeah,
the Pancho.
This is an actual dog. There's just always a missing dog poster, and I'm like, there's no way. This is organized crime.
Yeah, if it's a very little fat chihuahua, I'm like, let him keep it, man, because you are just, that dog's unhealthy.
Yeah, and the dog will never die. Also,
I'm such a pothead. Maybe you don't think of this, but like, every time I see one of those reward, a little dog poster, I always think it's like, I always pretend like it's a wanted poster and then that dog is wanted by the neighborhood. Like, this bad little dog. So high all the time.
That is so funny. That's like a Beverly Hills Chihuahua part 5. Like, that's the angle.
There are part 3 and 4. I can't believe we know that.
Yeah, Beverly Hills Chihuahua's low-key really good.
The first one or like the series?
I've only seen the first one.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure if you like stayed up with the series like Fast and the Furious and shit. You're like, actually.
Huge fan. I can't say that I have, but there's this one line where like the Beverly Hills Chihuahua ends up somehow I may be misremembering. This might not be true at all, but I seem to remember in the movie the Chihuahua ends up from Beverly Hills somehow in Tijuana in like a dog shelter in TJ. And they treat it like, oh, you know, like you don't want to get locked up in a Mexican prison. It's rough. So they treat the dog shelter like that in TJ. So all the dogs are these like tough Mexican inmate dogs. And then she ends up there and she's all scared and she's like, I'm from Beverly Hills. I don't belong here. And then one of the tough inmate dogs is like, you're a chihuahua, mija.
You had to have been high to write that script and sell it, man.
And they sold it. they did. And it was good, and it's good, and I loved it. So Saul, let's talk about the Comedy Store. You're a door guy there.
I am a door guy there. About 2 years, going on 2 years now.
How did that start? How did that begin?
It all starts, or at least started for me, like my processes was recommendation and just hanging out. Like when I first moved to LA, I was living in my car. So when I was living in my car, you could be everywhere. People are like, you live in your car, you could be at the improv mic, you could be at the store, because you got fucking, where am I going to hang out? I got nowhere to be but these mics. And the store was one of those places. I just hung out at the store and then introduced myself to all the door guys. And then when the pandemic happened and there was a mass exodus of door guys, of like, I'm going to go move to Austin. They needed door guys. And they were like, I was already on their list. So I was like, all right, let's get it. So then they hired me and like three or four other guys. So, and that was, I mean, that's been a blessing. It's the best job I've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, that's like, that's amazing. That's really cool. And how did you like, how did you decide that you wanted to come down to LA and make the move and live out of the car until something popped off? Like, how did that plan come into place?
It's kind of funny. So it's kind of counter of what people tell you to do. I've always had this link. You had this lingering thing of like, I want to move to LA. I want to do these things, but the action doesn't go put forth. Like, you're from out here, so that doesn't necessarily matter to you. But like, people not from LA or New York or wherever, there's always the ones that stay where they're from and then go, I want to do that, but never do it. And like, I was about 34 when I was like, man, I'm too old for LA. I took acid for the first time in 2018. And then I was like, I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to marry my girl and I'm going to stop gambling, because I was like a gambling addict. So all those three hit. And then I was like, I'm just going to move to LA the way I know how to move to LA. No plan, head first. And that's what I did. I just lived in my car for like a year. And it's, I guess do drugs sometimes because it works. Or at least acid. You ever done acid?
I've never done. The hardest thing I've ever done, I did Molly one time and it was too intense for me.
Well, if you could do Molly, you probably could do acid. What was the intensity of what didn't you not like about the Molly?
You know, it was just drinking and smoking is like, you know, that's that and it is what it is. And that's that experience. And the Molly was just such a step above what I had experienced with weed and alcohol. It was so much more elevated and in my kind of head. And it made me, it scared me, you know, I wasn't having fun. Yeah.
Might not have been Molly. You might have done meth, mija.
It was just, it was a very nice white boy that provided it for me. So actually, I don't know. I don't know. I cannot disclose because he's now a government employee. So I
can't. His name isn't Cletus or Clyde or some shit.
No. It's
okay.
Yeah, we'll go with Cletus. It was just too intense.
You probably wouldn't be able to handle like the just psychedelics. If you can't, you got to get out of your head. You got to like let it take over and just let yourself go with it. And sometimes a lot of people want to be in control, understandably. Like, I want to be in control, but like, I have to go, nah, this is, if I don't just let this win right now, then I'm going to freak the fuck out. I got to go, I'm on drugs. And then it sort of soothes me and I just let myself go and let it take over. That's usually when I do psychedelics. That's like mushrooms and acid. So like, when it'll hit me and instead of freaking out, I go, no, you're fine. You gotta let it go.
Yeah. Do you think maybe instead of acid, I should try mushrooms first? Because it's more plant-based, from the ground, organic.
I mean, they give it to soldiers for PTSD. So I don't see why it necessarily, because it calms them down. You know what I mean? It brings them back to center. Because like, sometimes those guys will have nightmares and they'll like take some mushrooms and then they'll just like, oh, I'm fine. They need it to survive. So I would say, try mushrooms. And I do hear a lot of people go, I can do mushrooms, but I can't do acid. So maybe it was stupid of me to say, hey, you should do acid.
Yeah.
I just went straight to it. I actually did acid before I did mushrooms. So I just wanted to try it. Somebody had it. Changed my life.
No, I have a lot of friends who have tried it. I just have this idea in my brain that if it's like a processed drugs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a tablet, it's a pill, it's a patch. Like, if it's human made, I'm like weary. But if it's like, oh, this is of the earth, you know, I'm a little more inclined. I might trust it a little bit more. God, I was about to ask you a question. Well, if it's good enough for the combat veterans, it's good enough for me. That's what I'll say about the mushrooms.
Well, I have some mushrooms. If you'd like to try some, that's fine. I always have psychedelics all over my house. I have drugs.
Fun.
Guns. Kind of like in cubby places just because I got to grab them in emergency.
Absolutely. How do you store your weed?
I have a little shoebox that I have my weed and my mushrooms and my acid in.
Cute.
Yeah, like a little cubby.
Does your wife also partake, or is this
weed.
Okay, cute. Do you smoke together?
Oh, I don't know if I was supposed to say that. She has a joke. Oh. You know what? Keep it in, dude. Keep it in. They're not gonna listen to this. Get out of here, waste management. Keep it in. She don't smoke flower. She smokes this. It's the most efficient way. She'll take a puff
and
she'll be like, oh, this is fun. Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I want her to quit that job anyway.
You're just helping the process.
I know, I'm talking shit because that job provides me medical insurance, but I'll get back on Medi-Cal.
Yeah, that's what it's there for. So, Saul, when did you start stand-up comedy? Yeah, take your time.
13 years ago. Jesus Christ. My wife calls me baby lungs.
Aw, I'm baby lungs too. I smoke.
It's the worst.
I can't take
big hits, but I do.
Yeah, I feel like I hate, okay, I want to get to your story. I want to get to your story about how you started stand-up comedy, but I will say that I think that it's really annoying how people are like weird about, like, people have all these rules about smoking weed when I feel like there should be no rules. Like, it's supposed to be chill. So all this stuff with like the way that you exhale and the way that you inhale and the coughing and the way you pack and the way you light and the way you roll, like, it's all too much. You know what I mean? I'm just like, leave me alone.
No, I 100% agree. I mean, because I don't know how to do a lot of like things when it comes to like weed. I don't know how to heat up a dab rig. I don't give a shit. I just smoke the weed. Who gives a fuck? I barely know how to. I just started learning how to roll blunts.
Yeah.
I don't. And like, that's ugly, but it'll smoke. I don't give a shit.
Right. I'm like, why is this the school science fair right now? Like, it's too it's too much going on.
It's all to do the same thing. It's for us to smoke. Yeah, relax.
Totally. So stand-up comedy. How did it begin for you?
I was in culinary school. I went to a trade school. When I was gambling, really gambling hard, I lost all my money to go to college. All my college credit money, like I was going to community college. I lost, I think I lost like $600-700. And instead of telling my parents I lost all that money, I was like, I got to figure out a plan. I got to change careers. So I was like, I saw a commercial on TV during the day after Judge Judy. It said Le Cordon Bleu Trade School in Sacramento. I was like, I'm going to go to that. And then I signed up for that. I think I was like 20 units away from graduating with a journalism degree in journalism. I was like, nah, I'm good. I could still keep gambling and go to culinary school and then never get caught. You know,
oh.
I was such a fiend for blackjack and poker and all that. So then I went to culinary school. And then like, it was like a year long because it's a trade school. Towards the end of it, we're about to graduate. These cholos in my class, they were like, hey, fool, you gotta 100% get to comedy because you're funny. And it's not fair. You know what's not fair? I called them cholos, and they ain't even cholos. They just dress like cholos. These fools that dress like cholos that aren't cholos, that's fucked up. They're not in a gang at all. Anyway, these false valor cholos, it's not
these
real
these guys.
Yeah, they were like, hey, fool, you're hella funny. You should really do stand-up. Because I would just crack jokes in class. Like, if we're cooking today, I would always talk shit. I would always be the loudest, and they'd be like, You need to try it one day. And then I wrote 5 minutes the very next day, but I didn't try stand up till like 2 years later. So in 2010, I finally mustered up the courage to go to Laughs Unlimited. It's like their B club. Like there's the A club, which is the Punchline Sacramento, and then there's Laughs Unlimited where I started. that's like the local mom and pop one. I just did their open mic and I was like, oh, this is it. This is it. Cause it's not like, you know, when you do it your first time, you're like, you're not supposed to be good. I destroyed my first time. And I was like, oh, I'm addicted to this. I need this. So I haven't looked back since.
Did you do like written, like prepared material? Yeah. The first 100%. you wrote before you went up for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And it was easy. Like you would just go back to like watch Chris Rock or Dave Chappelle. And if you just kind of watch and see how a setup works and you really pay attention instead of just like, all right, and that's what I did. You just pay attention to like what a setup is and a punchline is. And that's really all I did. And then some people figure it out faster than others, you know, like some people it takes legitimately 10 years to figure out how to write up a setup and punchline. Some people get it right away and then they don't become really funny till later. But I feel like there's a lot of people that get it right away. And then the only thing they can do is understand that they got to keep getting better because egos is what gets in the way. A lot of these young comics, they're like 3 years in, like, oh, I'm so funny. I'm like, nah, you're not, man. Wait till you're like 10 years in, then you'll be funny. Wait till you're like 15 years in. I'm 13 years in. And I can't wait till I'm 20 years in because I can't wait to see if I improve on that. I like to think that I will. Like, it's exciting to as the years pass.
It needs to marinate. Like, it really needs to marinate.
I don't think I'll really be the full potential comic that I want to be until I'm like 20, 25 years in.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you feel like, do you see yourself as like you're a club comic? Or are you like, you want to be on the road and touring? You want to do like film and television? Like, where do you see like your comedy going, basically? Where would you like it to go?
Where would I want it to go? And then there's the realism what's probably going to happen. Like, okay. I would like to be I have my own TV show and then tour, you know, do all these clubs. Uh-huh. Realism is I'll probably tour like clubs here and there, probably maybe sell out here and there as the years progress and then maybe get a staff writing job somewhere. That's the realism. But obviously shoot for the stars. I want my own show. Yeah. I'm gonna manifest it out there. I want my own show. I would like to sell out theaters. You know, you want that. But there's also, you gotta prepare for the reality of like, what if Hollywood doesn't work out? Then you're just doing B clubs. And I'd be happy with that too.
Yeah. As long as you're performing, as long as you're doing comedy. As long as I'm doing
it, yeah.
Yeah. Do you see like, so you see yourself like writing like for TV, it sounds like at some point.
Yeah. 100%. I've already written a couple things, a lot, like one thing that I'm really proud of. But like the thing about LA is that anything that you're super proud of, like they could go, nah, it's
not. Right.
You just put your heart. You're just like, fuck. All right, whatever.
This is you've been like slaving over this script. Yeah. It's your heart and soul.
Mm-hmm. And they'll go, nah. Go, okay, cool.
Have you had experiences like that?
Nothing close to like anything big, but like I think I pitched something to Audible once and then they were like, nah. And like it took me like 2 months to get all the people together, do the voiceover stuff, writing scripts and getting art done. And then this is before I even moved to LA. Like it was just, I want a little taste of it. And then to get a no, it was hurtful then. Now you understand that like moved to LA, the industry itself, it's mostly no's. It's a lot of until then that one, yes. And I haven't really started to get those no's yet. I've gotten a couple no's here and there, just like acting gigs, like auditions, and it's like that's whatever. And I feel like it's good practice for when I get a no that is going to really mean something. Am I going to go be all down about it, or am I going, all right, pick myself back up, keep it moving, what's the next idea?
Yeah, absolutely. We recently were on a show at a WeWork office in Orange County, that Don't Tell show.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was fun.
That was fun, right? Have you done like corporate settings like that? Like, is that something that you see a lot of?
No. I'm as blue collar as they come. Like, the most I've ever gotten paid for stand up is maybe is the most interesting. It's almost like a corporate gig. I got paid $1,000, but it was from definitely, I did 10 minutes and it was for definitely cleaning up. The dude was cleaning money. Like we did a show at the Stockton Theater, like at the Bob Hope Theater in Stockton, California. It was Tony Baker was headlining. I was first comedian, and they had two other guys. And then they paid us, the first two guys, $1,000. Lord knows what they paid everybody else. But there was 127 people there, and the theater fits 2,000 people. And the booker was just like, whatever, just handing people money, envelopes with money in it. He was smiling. He's like, we're going to do this again. I was like, oh, he's taking this loss as to clean up some money here.
Yeah.
I would do shows like that.
I see. Interesting. Yeah,
so I wouldn't do corporate stuff. I would do like shit.
But you got paid.
I don't give a fuck. It was in very clean $50 bills in an envelope, but I don't give a fuck.
I'm screaming.
Yeah, that's nuts. But I've never done like corporate stuff. No.
So how was that audience for you versus like the shows that maybe you more regularly perform?
137 people in a theater of 2,000? That was terrible. It was like doing 100 seater for 10 people.
Yeah.
It was weird. But I've done like I did a festival in San Luis Obispo. Well, you don't get paid. You just get exposure. Mm-hmm. For like 800 people. That shit was sick. That was cool.
That's a big crowd.
Yeah, so like acting out, act like you have to be big. You have to like, you have to have big energy. So like, you have to like, if I'm gonna act something out, I gotta act it out. Cause you remember, you're trying to get from front to back.
Right.
So that's the only way I could do it. I did well. It was great. But I was like, the only way that they're gonna feel like my material is if I actually act it out. And that's just how I felt. It would have probably been fine regardless.
Yeah. So festivals, like that sounds like a its own experience, like very different from performing at like a club.
So fun. I can't, not every festival is great. Some festivals are scams or just like, like a small town that wants to bring in money. Lord, you'll go to like a small town festival and then like every show sucks. But like they got like $100 from the comic just for the submission. The comic spent money at that hotel. The comic is spending money at all the time. And I'm like, this was a fucking money grab for like 40 people. This sucks.
And then I see. They're sourcing from the comic.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't know why. Or maybe it's just a delusional person like, oh, I could bring a comedy festival out here and they don't produce it right. I've done those. And I've done the good ones, like the San Luis Obispo one. I did this is a weird one, Skankfest in Vegas. That one's a weird one too. But those are like so well produced, so you feel like a celebrity, and that feels good.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds like super fun. I mean,
you should be doing festivals.
That sounds like a good time. I think I'm gonna definitely look into it. I've been kind of just seeing, you know, here and there. On Instagram,
just get a good submission tape. I think you've got one from Chatterbox, right?
Mm-hmm.
A good little seven minute, 4 to 7 minute submission tape. Send that to them, and yeah,
I'm gonna do it. Thank you. I'm down. Yeah. Hell yeah, sounds fun. So, where can my listeners, Saul Trujillo, where can my listeners follow you? Where can my listeners check you out and see you perform? And do you have anything coming up that folks out there should be aware of so that they can tune in, follow, support, all that good stuff?
Because Instagram's been nice. Follow me on Instagram at Saul Comedy. I post stand up clips. I do stupid stuff with like my wife. I go to the shopping. I do. It's dumb, but it's fun, and it's something you got to do if you're a comedian. Now I can't stress enough: get your Instagram going, get your TikTok going, get one of those because one of them will hit. You know. Follow me on Instagram. Follow me on TikTok at Mulleted Madman. What else?
Yeah. No. Do you get to perform in front of a lot of like predominantly Latino audiences?
I mean, that's who comes out to see me. It's not at first, but like as soon as I start coming out here, it started coming out. Like Latino audiences now, but like when I first moved to LA, because I was in Hollywood, it's predominantly industry, which is mostly white people. Now I'm starting to do Bellflower, I'm starting to Boyle Heights. But before I moved to LA, it was like Modesto, hella Mexicans.
Yeah.
It was like Fresno, hella Mexicans. So like, yeah. So I do perform in predominantly Mexican crowds. It's just what I'm used to. The energy is better. Like it feels like I'm talking to a bunch of people at a party when I do stand up with Mexicans, because sometimes they'll yell back and I don't mind. If it's not, I like when the audience talks, because Mexicans know when to stop. They're like, hey, fool, calm down, let them talk. They're the best hecklers, because they just want to, they're not heckling. They want to just be a part of the cheesemate. And I always have fun with that. And it's the only two standing ovations I've ever gotten in my life is from all Mexican crowds.
How did that feel? What was that like, your first standing O? What was that like?
I mean, it's all I chase now. It's like, if I'm doing an hour, if I feel like I'm about to get one, I'm like, all right, I'm crushing enough and I'm like doing well enough, I'm like, oh, I might get one. And then I don't, I'm like, I don't. Some comics chase just laughs. I chase applause breaks. I can't, I want to get it. You know, like I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, because I do feel like if Mexicans are doing a round of applause, it doesn't seem like an insincere, like, applause break, like, being polite. Like, they mean it.
They're about it. They mean it.
They don't just give polite rounds of applause, you know?
Yeah, and I love it. I feed off of that energy. It's the best.
Hell yeah. Saul Trujillo, thank you for stopping by. Yes, you are most welcome. I was very excited that you accepted the invitation, that you said yes. Thank you for taking the time. This has been another episode of Marihuanera Podcast for Potheads.
There it is.
Okay, I'm going to stop recording.